everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. I'm your host, Phil Holdsworth, and my wonderful guest today is Jane Keogh. Jane, good morning.
Good morning, Phil. Thank you for having me on.
Lovely to have you with me on the podcast today. Jane, you're a personal development and well-being coach. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about you?
When you ask me to tell them about me, what do you mean, about what I do or who I am or how I got into it? Because there's so many aspects to...
There is so many aspects. But then the thing is, every aspect is very interesting about you as well. So, no, tell our listeners about what you do and how you got into it.
Okay, so it all started with my own personal development journey, actually. I woke up one morning and realised that I was triggered. My behaviour was manifesting some covered trauma and past emotional experiences and that hadn't been dealt with, and I'd been suppressing and kept on coming to the surface. And so I've always been interested in psychology of people. I used to be sales director for a computer company, and I developed people to become good at selling. And I realized very early on that everybody was very unique, and that to get people to perform, you had to understand them and what their personal goals were. So I've always naturally been interested in people and helping them be the best version of themselves. But I wanted to do that for myself in the first instance. So I got involved with my own journey in terms of resolving past emotional stuff that had been very traumatic throughout my life. It was around my 39th birthday that I realized that it was time to look at the stuff and to change my behavior, because I wasn't happy and realized it wasn't who I was.
So
I trained in neuro-linguistic programming, otherwise known as NLP. In the first instance, I did my practitioners, which was a very intense course. And it brought up a lot of stuff that I dealt with. Very, very challenging, quite uncomfortable in lots of ways, but also very, very enlightening. And it really started to shift some major stuff for me. And I felt this load lifting. And then I went on to do my master practitioner, which was a very practical course. And more stuff came to the surface, and have continued to develop myself personally and also professionally, so I best can help clients. Yeah. And I'm slightly different to a therapist, because I don't actually just do talk therapy. It's about giving people a set of tools to help them deal with stuff that is triggered outside of sessions. So yeah. I want to work with people and companies that want to see a permanent change, but understand that it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
So I basically help people to become self-aware in the first instance, to take responsibility for their own behavior and not blame everything or everyone else for that. And to understand that the only way to really deal with uncomfortable things is to face it. It's almost like turning around and going, okay, where are my gremlins? Let me face them full on, and let me process and feel what is uncomfortable or what we perceive to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Because
often the thought of dealing with bad feelings, bad emotions, is worse than it actually is in reality.
Yeah. And I like the term that you said, the gremlins, because oftentimes we don't really appreciate what's going on inside of us. Right. And we sometimes need some assistance. So because we don't appreciate it, and I'm talking from my own perspective in terms of being a male, that sort of the culture we have where, you know, the stiff upper lip, you know, we're British and so on, which is all rubbish, because it locks so many people up. But the fact that we're not encouraged to be able to identify those emotions that are going on, we may struggle with that. And if we're struggling with it, we may not recognise the fact that there is something there that needs unlocking, but others see it in us, don't they, in our behaviour. Just I know we were talking about this earlier, but just the whole thing of why people don't talk, why people don't ask for help, why people won't necessarily go and see somebody like yourself, Jane, and actually say, look, something's going on. I don't know what it is. I don't understand it. Can you help me? Why do you think there's so much sort of stigma, and why do you think it's difficult for people to ask for help?
Well, that's how long is a piece of string question, but I will do my best to answer it as fully as I can.
Well, we've got time.
Largely, it's down to programming and conditioning. I think certainly my parents' generation were some of them were children in the war. Everybody was in the same boat or in the same storm in different boats, and they were told to just get on with it, stiff upper lip. We also are very proud as a nation. I think particularly men associate emotion with being weak, which is not true. I think an emotionally evolved man is actually a very, very positive and attractive person, because it's about saying, well, I understand myself. I understand that I am behaving this way because I need to deal with something that happened to me in the past that I haven't known how to deal with, because we haven't been taught how to feel bad.
Yeah.
If you remember, we used to be punished for crying. There, don't cry. We were distracted from being upset. You hurt yourself. We were placated. You know, let's go to the shop. Let's buy an ice cream. Let's go to the park. You've lost your bike. Let's replace it. And so we're literally told to ignore the stuff that we need to feel.
Yeah.
And we're human beings, and part of the human experience is to have all these different emotions. It's not about being positive 100% of the time, but it's about saying, okay, well, I know who I am. I know how I need to be happy. I know what I need in terms of environment, not just buildings, houses, offices, but people, the energy. We're energetic beings. And it's going, okay, so what do I need to be the best version of myself? How can I be or maintain more constant, even behavior so that I am leading my best life? And so men are told to man up, which is a horrible term, horrible term. They're told that it's not okay to be emotional, but actually it is totally the opposite. You have to be able to be an emotional being. Yes, men and women are different emotionally. Definitely, we're completely different makeup. You know, we are made differently, but men still have feelings, but they tend to sort of like bristle about them. They tend to ignore it. They tend to think, well, it's not okay. I have to be proud, and I can't reach out to anybody. And if I do, I'm going to be perceived as being weak. But what I would say to people is, and I implore this actually, is the more you understand your emotional reactions, the more you're able to deal with them and release them. And if we don't face the feelings that make us uncomfortable, we can cause ourselves all sorts of problems in terms of not just mental health, but physical health as well.
So
what happens is that the body gets put under an enormous amount of stress, and we produce a lot of cortisol and adrenaline, amongst other things, that are very unhelpful and put the body under duress. And if they are not managed effectively, they will go on to give us things like high blood pressure, heart attacks, strokes, maybe even drive us to drink and other such addictions to do the avoidance thing.
Just on that front, Jane, because I have a good example of what you're talking about, because it refers to me. I went through quite a traumatic experience with somebody in a leadership role, somebody who's an influencer, and it was their behaviour that, and eventually their, I was part of an organisation. Eventually, I was pushed out. And it was the way it all happened. And the issue was this individual. And this individual was really, wherever they were going, they were causing chaos and mayhem in different people's lives. And I just happened to be one of those people. And I think I was one because, in a way, I think I kind of threatened them. But I wasn't threatening. It was just the fact that who I am and the way I am had an effect on them. And I think it was more to do with their perception of themselves as opposed to other people. You know, poor self-image, for example, feeling insecure in their position. And so, but I remember how I felt in that situation and going through that process, talking about the physical impact, I started to suffer tremendously with indigestion. And I just thought, well, you know, I've got a lot going on at the moment, you know, and you try in your mind just to sort of explain it away and, you know, just get on with it, deal with it. And you're trying to sort of cope. But this thing just went on and on and on. And it was at times quite painful. So I went to the doctors and, you know, with all due respect to doctors, you know, the first thing they tend to do is, well, give you some medication. And it was interesting, the sort of medication I was on, I didn't realize, the idea of it is to line your stomach, your gut. But it means that anything else you take on, your body can't absorb it, you know, because it's trying to protect your body, but inadvertently, it's also creating a barrier for anything else, you know, nutrients or anything like that. And so I put up with this for a year, and I thought this is ridiculous. And eventually, I came to the conclusion, I need to talk to somebody. I need to unpack what's going on. I need to talk to somebody. It took a lot for me to get to that stage. But when I did, I remember the first session I had, actually sitting down and talking to a counsellor, I explained to them that I really want to learn what has happened here and so that I can be a help and a support to other people who may have gone through similar things. And so being aware of it, as we talked, this person would put context around. Mm-hmm. So they weren't leading me, they were allowing me to talk, but they were putting context around it, which helped me understand. Do you know that first session, it's the whole indigestion just went. And it just blew me away.
That's what happens, you see, if there's something that hasn't been addressed, and often just paying it attention is the first step.
Yeah.
Identifying it is the second step. But once you actually say, okay, this is what I'm feeling, yeah, it will, because you're actually saying, okay, that's good. I accept it. I acknowledge it. And by paying it attention, it's a bit like paying a toddler or a puppy attention. They keep on coming back unless you address what it is that they want.
Yeah.
And the same with unhelpful emotions. It's the energy, the emotions that get stuck in the body. Our bodies are like barometers and they give us signals, but we ignore them.
So
what I do in the first instance is teach people how to become self-aware, then how to identify the emotion around the situation that we're discussing. So the situation or the story of the events that occurred. And the thing is, you can't change what's happened, but what tends to happen is what the energy of the emotions keep on feeding the story. It's almost like it's plugged into electricity.
Yeah.
And so we need to unplug that, separate the emotions from the story, identify them, learn how to feel them, pay them attention. And there are various ways we do this with techniques that I have. And then you release them so that the story neutralizes and it just becomes something that occurred.
Yeah.
And going back to your point about someone's behavior in the workplace, often that type of behavior is trauma-based.
Yeah.
And the person is unaware of it. They're insecure, which you identified. They see in other people things that they know they don't have themselves. And so they feel threatened and they go into defensive mode. And that's a typical trauma response. And it can be very easily dealt with if the organizations have some kind of well-being package available to employees, especially the companies that don't have the HR support and the trainers within house. And you can resolve massive problems like that fairly simply with the permission of the people. Because if someone's not willing to come to the table, there's no point whatsoever. And some people will never, ever develop because they don't want to, because it's too difficult for them to do. And so they will continue to judge, they will continue to criticize, but that's not about the other person. It's about them and what's going on inside of them. But it feels very personal. Then I use another technique called havening, which deals with, it's a neuroscience. It's I can't think of the word now. Anyway, it's psychosensory. So it deals with the brain and it deals with touch. And what it does is it reverses trauma and it helps sift out uncomfortable emotions. But also with trauma, we only deal with it content free. So people don't have to relive their story. So I've worked with a young man who was falsely accused of rape, for example, and he was diagnosed with PTSD. And we reversed the effects of that in 2 hours, to the point where he can't even recall the trauma of it anymore because it's been neutralized. I've worked with a young lady who'd been raped, and she now can talk about it without being triggered. But it's also very good for things like bullying, things like what occurred to you, and for identifying emotions and getting them sifted out of the system. But this is really an important point here. If we continue to ignore what is uncomfortable, it will eventually come and impact us in a health way. And we, in my opinion, and it is just my opinion, we don't have to carry around our past trauma. We don't have to carry around the pain that we've endured. We can let it go so that we can be present and live our lives now.
It's interesting what you're saying there, because I suppose you don't have to look too far to almost see people carrying these burdens with them, and this trauma. I mean, you very kindly sort of shared with me earlier about your own experience of the impact that it had because of carrying something that, do you want to sort of say a bit more about that?
Yeah, it was interesting as well, because I felt very, very, very vulnerable after that experience. And I was in two minds whether to share my story with people because of what I do. And then I thought, actually, I am still a human being, and it's remembering that. And I am an emotional human being. I'm very good at dealing with my emotions. I know how to identify them. But I endured a heck of a lot of very, very challenging emotional situations back in 2021. Obviously, it was 2020, was COVID, and then 2021, I had a series of losses. I lost my mom. I lost my dog who worked with me in my practice. I lost a friend half an hour after I was speaking to her on the phone. My marriage broke up. Another friend, something very, very nasty happened, and it took me by surprise. And one thing after another just kept, and as fast as I was trying to deal with them, another thing happened. And then my son fell out with me over the whole COVID thing. There was a difference of opinion, and it was very upsetting. And I ended up in hospital with what they suspected to be a heart attack, which was a complete shock because I'm very healthy. I exercise, I eat well, I meditate, I do yoga. I walk a lot with the dogs. I'm out in nature because I know what I need to keep me consistently an even keel. And so it was a real, real shock to my system to be told that I may have experienced a heart attack. And I really felt like my world was coming to an end. It was like, but how can this have happened? And, you know, I went through this massive grieving process about the fact that I potentially had lost my health, which is really important to me. Anyway, a doctor came to chat to me, and he was from the Middle East, and he asked me, what's been going on emotionally for you in the last few months? And I said, well, in the last year and a half, this, 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 and this has happened. And he went, I think it's Taco Subo. I said, "What's that?" And he said, "It's called broken heart syndrome, and it's a Japanese name for an octopus pot, which is what they catch octopuses in. And your heart literally enlarges the left ventricle, and it can't function fully, which is why it feels like a heart attack." And he says, "And it's caused through the high production of adrenaline and cortisol due to emotional stress."
Wow.
And you can get it mildly, severely, and moderately. And I had it moderately. In fact, a friend of mine died in August, and her brother died 13 days later of what we believe to have been Takotsubo. It happens less in men than women, by the way. I've made a full recovery from it because I addressed all the things that needed to be addressed. But I'm very mindful that it is important to me to manage my emotional state and not ignore it because I'm so busy looking after everybody else.
Yeah. Which brings us right back to that point of, you know, the damage that can be caused by people carrying things and not being willing to deal with them because they think that by dealing with it, it could be quite painful. They don't want the pain. They've had enough pain, probably. But in actual fact, it's quite releasing, and it's health driven as well.
Totally. And the weird thing about it is that once your body knows that you're dealing with things, it will bring things up for you. It almost exacerbates it for a short period of time. But with the techniques that I use in particular, because they're calming, they release very quickly when they're applied. So I teach people how to then manage stress, anxiety, all the things that happen on a daily basis, so that they don't have to be anchored by them or held back by them, so that they can go away and use this kit when they're not with me. And then they plug in sort of like, you know, maybe once a month, every 6 weeks. But typically, as human beings, we use the tools when we need them and then we park them when we don't. But I use them all the time, every day, because that's how I maintain that balance to be able to support other people.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I do find it fascinating in many respects. But what we don't realize as human beings is how interconnected we are within ourselves. It's almost as if we like to pigeonhole things. And when we do that, we're like separating things out. Yet everything is interconnected. So if you are emotionally impacted, then you can also be physically impacted.
Your energy is impacted by that.
Yeah.
The frequency in which you are operating alters. You've walked into a room before and you felt tension. You know those situations where you go to someone's house and clearly something has gone on before you've arrived and you go, whoa, you can cut the atmosphere with a knife. You know, you can feel, we're not aware of it necessarily because we're so distracted and so detached and so disengaged because of our technology. But we are energetic beings, and our energy is impacted when we are carrying a lot of negativity and a lot of unhelpful things.
Yeah.
So I describe it a bit like we're like a computer, and we need to shut down all the old, we need to sort of reboot and defragment and get rid of all the bugs, shut down all the old windows that we've got open in the background, and then like upgrade our software. And it's fundamentally that we need to do and sort of say, okay, well, once I know that I can identify an emotion or a feeling. Now, feeling is often something that you can't identify, but you feel it somewhere in your body. So typically we feel in our stomachs, hearts, throat areas, sometimes head as well. And it's like that someone's sat on your chest or there's a knot in your stomach.
Yeah.
And that's energy of something unhelpful that the body is holding on to. And a lot of it is held in our stomachs. And that's why so many of us have digestive problems, because we're so tense in that area that our digestive system can't work effectively because it's too busy knotted up with all the emotions that are trapped there. And when we're dealing with them, people's stomachs start to gurgle because everything starts to relax because it's been released. And they come back and go, oh, I haven't had the same stomach problems I had, you know, the last time I came. They've gone.
Yeah.
Because actually you're identifying.
Yeah, and I can identify with that. So like you, I'll go and do public speaking and presentations and events and so on. But and one of the things I know about myself is that I always have sort of nerves beforehand. Very often my nerves are because I just want to do a good job. I just want to, you know, for people to, whatever it is I'm carrying, for them to be able to receive that and receive it well. But equally at the same time, I recognize, you know, what's going on. And for me, it's kind of my digestive system. With others, I've talked with others about this, and I said, you know, how are you impacted? And they will talk about things like headaches, for example. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, it's really interesting. Now, that on a small scale, actually, I find quite helpful for me, because it, in the moment, it keeps me quite really switched on, you know, that ability to think and so on as I'm presenting. And once I start, it's almost like everything just goes, I'm here, and I calm down. But that's a good thing. But you were talking earlier on about things like adrenaline and cortisol, and we know these are the, you know, the chemicals the body naturally creates when we're in a fight or flight situation. And you alluded to this about the fact that where there's a constant flow of this adrenaline and cortisol could be quite damaging. And, yes. You know, and I think in a way kind of led to the experiences I had, but clearly also led to what you had with the, what did you call it? The TACO?
Subo. It's about TAKOTSUBO. TACO right. Subo. Yeah. And it's, yeah, it is. But it's, I mean, the body is fascinating. It is really a barometer. But because we really don't know how to feel bad, because that's not what we've been taught. You know, we were sent to our rooms to do it, and we were punished, sent, go to your room.
Yeah.
Go and be alone. So, of course, we go, well, we can't talk to anybody about this because this doesn't feel comfortable, because this is not what we're told to do. This is what we've been told is not what you do.
Yeah.
But all of us are different. We're unique and we all process differently. But yeah, it's not about men becoming blubbering wrecks or emotional wrecks. It's about men becoming emotionally evolved, understanding themselves and their needs, and being able to sort of like, take some of the pressure off that's applied. And I'm talking mainly about men here, because women typically are better at talking about stuff. Mm-hmm. But also, women tend to like to talk about their stories and carry them around with them.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous as well, because it's not releasing, it's not letting go. Because when we're hanging on to something that's happened in the past, we tend to project the possibility of it happening in the future, and we don't live in the moment.
That's an interesting point. If you bear with me a moment, but if somebody is not willing to let go, they're carrying it. Do you think there's something sitting behind that? Because sometimes I look and I think I'm listening to somebody's story. I'm thinking, I've heard this story before. And wherever I seem to bump into them, I hear this story. But I don't mean in terms of they're just giving an example, but more in terms of almost like wanting sympathy. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking there's something that you're needing, but you don't recognize what it is. And so your way of dealing with this is to carry this trauma around with you and not let it go.
It becomes familiar, and people sometimes aren't aware they're doing it, but also they identify with it.
Mm.
And that's the problem. Because of this, I behave like this. It's like they're, without realizing it, they're giving themselves the excuse to be the victim.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, I did that in my earlier life I'd had a troubled childhood, alcoholic mother, violent, aggressive father. I had to grow up at 11, you know, substitute my mum at my dad's sort of cocktail parties because we were expats living in Portugal. And I was raped when I was 23. And these things I carried around with me. And as an excuse for the way I behaved when I got frustrated and overwhelmed by all the emotions that were bubbling under the surface, simmering.
Yeah.
And until I actually decided to say, okay, well, how can I let go of this story? How can I stop blaming that for me being the way I am right now? I was continuing to behave that way. But when I realized that I was responsible for how I feel, nobody else, this is a key point, actually. No one else makes us feel the way we do. Their behavior may trigger us, but our feelings are our own responsibility. And so it was at that point that I thought, okay, I don't like the results I'm getting. I have to change something in me. I have to address what is making me behave this way. And that's where I take responsibility for my part in it.
Yeah.
That's what I did. And I became this lighthearted, fun, mischievous. It was almost like I embraced, and I do inner child work, by the way, but I brought my inner child back to life. That child who I'd parked at 11 came back into me. And I can talk about my past experiences without it triggering me. It's neutral.
Yeah.
It's just something can't it's change
quite,
it.
Yeah, it's quite releasing as well, because one of the things I found when I talk with some people, I feel that emotionally they're stuck at a certain age. It's almost like their emotions, they stop maturing emotionally at that point because of whatever it was they went through.
Well, the thing is what happens is, so say you're 40 and the event happened to you when you were 10, your 40-year-old self is behaving like your 10-year-old self, but you're an adult behaving like a 10-year-old, and people go, what the hell? I'm not accepting that. But they can't help it until they go and address that incident when they were 10. And often people come to me about something that's bothering them right now. But when I get the history, because I send out a questionnaire to find out their emotional landscape, so yeah. I go back to the beginning and say, well, this happened there. Let's deal with that first. And the thing now almost disappears, not totally, but it then has less intensity.
Yeah.
So we do that. You know, we've got to address the stuff that happened early on. If someone was bullied at school, or they lost a parent, or their parenting wasn't particularly good, you know, needs weren't met. We address that in session so that they then become less needy.
Yeah, it's I see that in the world of money, believe it or not. The behavior that people display around how they sort of manage their money or how they see it can very often be rooted right back into childhood experiences and experiences that they've sort of had, or they've observed or heard throughout their developmental period. And it's interesting, in the industry I work in, it's still something that is not really recognized. And yet we get frustrated with people who we put a good plan together for them, and yet they're not able to achieve that plan, or it falls over at some point in time, because we've not really looked at the narrative from the past that's informing the present and then affecting the future.
And that's fundamentally what needs to be done. And, you know, of course, things like your relationship with money and your relationships with other people are largely influenced by our early influences, our parents. And I'm not dishing our parents. They do the best they can with what they've got. But, you know, a lot of them were emotionally stunted in our day in particular. And I can't say that that's the case now. But languaging and words, tonality, they're really important factors. There's a nursery rhyme that says, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, that's not true. Words are actually more damaging than anything else. And in this day and age, where most of our communication is written through text and email, a lot of stuff is misconstrued and it triggers people. And that's why you get this defensive reaction and these attacks and this aggressive, perceived aggressive behavior.
Yeah.
But I hear people saying things out and about, and I go, oh my goodness, please don't say that to your child, you know. So, you know, my parents, money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
You know? We, you know, there was always talk about money and it wasn't helpful.
Yeah. 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 And it's born really out of their own sort of bringing and experiences. And yeah. And yes, there is very often there's fear, which causes things like, for example, a lack mentality, and particularly that generation that went through, say, for example, the Second World War and rationing after the war, or were brought up during that period. You can see it sometimes in the way that they are, the decisions they make, and that sort of, like, I call it like poverty mentality. But yeah.
When I was 11, I think I was 11, there was a revolution in Lisbon, in Portugal. There was a dictatorship and it was overthrown, I think, the army. And I think it was 1974. Anyway, I can remember my parents discussing it and filling us with fear around, you know, getting provisions in, tinned goods, all this kind of stuff. We weren't allowed to go out. We couldn't go on the streets and all this kind of stuff. And I was naturally curious. And I snuck out, and I can remember sat on a wall, legs dangling down, watching the troops going through the streets and tankers and all the rest of it, and thinking it was quite exciting, actually, because I was naturally curious. But I think when we are fear-ridden, we tend to lose that ability to be curious and look at life with wonder. And we almost get killed within us, that childlike curiosity and wonder and interest in everything. And that really spoils our human experience and our human interactions as well. And as human beings, we thrive on meaningful social connections, and those ought to be on the whole in person. And that's why we're seeing so much depression and anxiety and stress these days, because people are missing out of those things that we need, you know.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. This is a fascinating subject, and it's massive, as you rightly said when we first started talking, that, you know, huge area. But I'm conscious that time has passed us by. And just picking up on your very last point there about, you know, missing out on all of these things, I wouldn't want people to miss out on these adventures that you take people on every year down the Zambezi River. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was inspired by the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and I wanted to make a difference somehow. And so I can remember saying to the guy who showed me the presentation, well, how can I make a difference? You know, it's just little old me sort of thing. And then he said, well, who are you not to? And I thought, actually, that's a very, very, very powerful question. And I thought, yeah, who am I not to? And then I thought, well, what could I do? What do I know? And I'd lived and worked in Zambia in the bush, and I loved it. And I thought, I know what I can do. I can set a challenge, and I can put it out to my community, my business network, and invite them to join me to raise funds for conservation, education of conservation in the Lower Zambezi with the conservation unit down there. And we'll do a massive challenge like canoe 90 kilometers in hippo and croc infested waters and wild camp, and that's what we've been doing. And people pay for their own trip, and then they raise funds, a minimum of £750, but one year 10 of us raised £25,000. We put 16 kids through school, and we sit around campfires on an evening under the Milky Way, and the African stars are incredible. We have herds of elephants around us, hippos, crocodiles, fish, eagles. We do a game drive, we trek up a mountain to see the mighty Zambezi, and it's a massively transformational trip on so many levels, because people get to ground themselves, because we don't have our mobile phones, because there's no mobile signal, there's no Wi-Fi for 5 days of the trip. And people sit around the campfire at night and we have sundowners, as the sun goes down, and we chat and we listen and we connect with nature, we connect with ourselves, we regenerate ourselves, and you see the color coming back into people's faces. It's just wonderful. It's such an enriching experience.
And I know you've often sort of talked about it, and I really do find it fascinating. And one day I might actually join you down the Zambezi.
You better hurry, because at some point I'll be putting my paddle up.
But, you know, I mean, what a way to connect with nature, but at the same time, you know, do some good and be impacted yourself as well.
So what we do is we basically visit the conservation unit to see the work that they do on the ground. We go with trained guides as well. And we also visit a local school and, you know, village, so people can get the real experience of how people live out there. And at least, like you say, it's, you know, being amongst wildlife in the habitat where it should be, not in the zoo, not in the safari park, but out in the wilderness as it should be. And if we don't do more collectively, we won't have it anymore. Wild dogs are endangered. Elephants are endangered. There's 100 poached every single day in Africa. Wow. You know, so we don't do something, we don't care about it. And it's not just the jobs of the Africans. It's everybody's responsibility.
It is fascinating. It's challenging as well.
Oh, yeah. It's dangerous. It's
dangerous, yeah.
I always breathe this sigh of relief when everybody lands at the lodge at the end of the trip and they've all got their hands, feet, fingers, and every part of their body is still intact.
Yeah, it wouldn't bode well. I went down the Zambezi and what happened to your arm? Ah, well, no, none of that.
One year there were two incidences that happened in 2 years that we did it, or was it two incidents happened in 1 year? Both of them were human error. One was a dinghy that was on the Zimbabwean side, because we canoe between Zimbabwe and Zambia, and it was upriver near the falls. And someone had gone out on the river in a dinghy, a rubber dinghy. Now, a rubber dinghy feels soft. So if a crocodile touches it with its nose, it's going to think it's an animal. So this crocodile sunk its teeth into it and it sunk. And so the people in the thing were flapping around, and this girl's arm got removed by this crocodile, but she survived it. And then recently, no, it wasn't the same year, there was a school trip also on the Zimbabwean side, and the guide let her put her foot in the water. And you know, the first thing we say in our safety briefing is, do not put your hands and feet in the water. You drop anything in, let us deal with it. So all the incidences that have happened that are reported are usually down to human error.
Right. And just for our listeners' sake, none of these incidents happened on your trips.
No. We go with three safari guides. I'm also trained. So there's three of us in canoes to help people out if they get tired or they're struggling. And then we have someone in a motorboat that follows us with all the equipment, all the food, the tents, all that kind of stuff. And also goes ahead to check for any hazards. They know how to read the water. They know how to read wildlife behavior, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
We have 100% safety record. I'm very
brilliant. I'm glad to hear that, Jane. It's been wonderful talking to you. If anybody has really been sort of inspired or impacted by anything that we've talked about here and things that you've shared with us, Jane, how could they get hold of you?
So I'm very easy to get hold of. I am online, obviously. I've got Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, Jane Keogh, K-E-O-G-H, or jane@janekeogh.co.uk is my email address. And, you know, it's just reaching out, and I'm always happy. I always have a conversation with someone in the first instance to find out what's going on and whether we're the right match or not. and also like to work with small businesses who may be having some communication issues between members of staff that are very easily resolvable when you know how.
Right, wonderful. Thank you so much, Jane, and really appreciate this time with you, and take care.
And have a lovely weekend.
And you take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.